Ricardo.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to a brand new edition of the Swift Kicks podcast. I'm Alex, and with me, as always, are Ben and Steve. Today's podcast is a special one. We have our first official guest joining us, Adam Robbins, co-founder and brewmaster of Rubens Brews in Seattle. We're going to bring him in a little bit to help us tell us about his brewery, what it's all about, and also get his take on Euros in the upcoming Premier League season. But first, we do have to talk about that Euro final, don't we? Wembley Stadium bouncing all day Sunday with feverish anticipation of a new dawn for English football. But those hopes of a new era were dashed by the ghosts of England's past. 1-1 in regular time, settled in the end by 3 missed penalties by England. Ben and I watched the game together. So, Steve, without gloating too much about your correct trash take, what did you make of the whole thing?
1 trash take out of 300.
Of the whole entire tournament, it was refreshing to have an international tournament back again. It just felt like with the world being on pause for so long, it was awesome to have something to be excited about. From the days of having, like, you know, 3 games a day and then watching as the teams go on, all the drama that comes with an international tournament, players, young players that are coming up, the underdog stories, everything. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and it was something that I think the world had been missing for a long time.
What'd you make of Gareth Southgate? You know, he says that the penalty shootout was all on him, like who he chose. Like, what do you make of that?
I was going to say, new coach, same old Southgate, right? Like, classic Southgate to choke on penalties. Now, I got a little bit of an issue with the fact that, so first off, night and day different England team than I've ever seen before. Super exciting to see how they attack. They went 1-0 up. They went on the back burner, defended a little too much against an Italy that can and will score against you. It bit them. They should have put the, you know, pedal to the metal. They should have finished them. You're up 1-0 early in the game. My rule of thumb when I was coaching is if you're up early, you run the score. You try to score as many goals as quick as possible. And then, you know, after the 60, 65-minute mark, you then kind of come back and go into the reserves. So defending a 1-0, you know, lead for essentially 87 minutes is just not possible. But I am concerned that, you know, Gareth Southgate thought it was, in fairness, he was trying to bring on 2 players for about 5 minutes. And those players were Rashford and Sancho. And no fault of their own, both had missed their penalty kicks, but their first is Rashford's second kick of the ball because he was playing right back for 5 minutes and had to make a tackle. And then Sancho's first kick of the ball was in a world or is in a Euros final, right? Sancho's a very young player, still proving himself, kind of working his way up. Rashford, I think you can put that pressure on him. Unlucky, mate. Sorry you missed that. I feel bad for him. And the same really with Saka, right? A young kid being expected to you know, carry the world on his shoulders. You know, is he building for the World Cup? Who knows? But for me, that was just poor management in the last minute. But that same management I'm being critical of got us to a final at Euros, which is super exciting to see England progress, right?
Saka just finishes his high school prom and then is expected to be the 5th penalty taker in a Euro final. Doesn't make sense to me in the slightest.
Yeah, and I think what's also prudent is that we have to address the racism that's unfortunately come out in the aftermath of that game. All 4, Saka, Sancho, and Rashford, all happen to be black players, all getting racial abuse. Start by saying, you know, that's absolutely disgusting. I've seen a lot about the fact that, you know, that they are teenagers or they're young. The fact is, you know, it doesn't really matter what age they are.
Yeah, okay, what age?
I think things were best summed up by Rashford himself, though. He's been, you know, pretty steadfast through all of this. You know, he said in part in it was a Twitter statement that my penalty wasn't good enough, should have gone in. You know, you can judge me for that, but I'll never apologize for who I am and where I come from. And I think that was probably the best message, you know, to really sort of encapsulate what's going on there. You know, there seems to be maybe some arrests that have been made in regards to the abuse that's gone on. So there seems to be some developments. Yeah, it looks like they were trying to put pressure on like Twitter and social media sites to figure out who these, you know, anonymous trolls were to try and figure out who's behind it.
Because the weekend I was with work, but I kind of unplugged from social media for a good amount of time when I was out doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see, I mean, I had heard of some things, but I didn't see much of like what was happening, what the response was, all these different things. And then I kind of just became aware of it all today. Yeah, it's crazy. I've seen Harry Kane come out, Tyron Mings, like you said, Rashford as well, Southgate. There's been a lot of people just adamant about like just how wrong that is, which is
good. Yeah, to and see, in a way, but it's almost taking you past like the loss, and now it's like we need to stand up for these players. You know what I mean? Like just sort of this is the new fight going ahead, and until there's another game that they have to play, things like that. So you know, it's really unfortunate. But hopefully it's being addressed and will be done so in a proper way. So Ben, you might be able to call everything though an Italian curse. Looks like Chiellini admitted to putting a curse on Saka before he went up and took a penalty. So he said,
"What?
Kirkoko apparently is a word that's been used by footballers for decades. I've literally never heard of this, to impart bad luck on the opposition." And he's admitted to yelling that before Saka went up to take his penalty. So I think it's an Italian curse. That's basically what happened.
What
did he put a curse on him, or did he fracture his neck by two-handing his throat? Like he pretty much like Homer Simpson choked out him.
What's the source of this information? The Sun?
Goal.com. Chiellini's mouth.
No. Snapchat.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Chiellini's such a cheeky guy, right? Like,
he's
in the semis. Did you see him? The whole game.
Did you guys see the kickoff of Italy versus Spain?
Yeah.
Did you just happen to catch that game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you catch the coin toss?
Yes.
For the PKs. That wasn't the kickoff. That was PKs.
I'm sorry. The coin.
Yeah, it was a coin toss for which end the PKs were going. And it's rumored that Spain won it and Chiellini got to make the call anyway.
Yeah. And like you could see Azpilicueta was visibly not having it or like just upset. And Chiellini is like, just like older brother, like slapping him on, like, oh, isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? He's like, just like, you've seen it. And Azpilicueta like, bro, stop touching me. Right. And Chiellini just like keeps it going and just keeps it going and just like, even like picks him up a little bit, because Azpilicueta, he's so small and Chiellini's a towering man. Just,
yeah,
I don't know. You could just see like just the mental, him just getting into his head. I just thought it was, I agree with that.
He's a gamesman.
Yeah, he's a gamesman. He's a gamesman.
That's for sure. However, the gamesman's won out, I suppose, despite 100,000 fans demanding that there be a replay of the match. Italy won. Congrats to them. We're going to get into this a little bit. In our first ever guest interview, it's with Adam Robbins from Ruben's Brews in Seattle. This is a great conversation. You guys are going to want to listen to this. All right, so at the beginning of the show, I said that we were going to bring on a very special guest. It's actually our first guest of the Swift Kicks podcast, and we're very happy to bring on Adam. He is the co-founder and brewmaster at Ruben's Brews in Seattle. Adam, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. And the inaugural guest, right?
Yeah.
There's not even one of those. Yeah.
It's always good to be first, right? So we are going to get to your beer. We're going to talk about everything like that. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a football fan. Who do you support? What got you into the sport?
Yeah. So Adam Robbins. I was born in London, grew up just west of London, lived in Camden for 10 years before I moved to the US, and I've been here now 17 years. So my accent still sounds like a Brit when I'm over here, but when I go back there, I sound like an American. So I'm like mid-Atlantic. That's where I'm from. Yeah. So in terms of football, yeah, obviously it's very hereditary in the UK, right? Like, and I'll never forget, like I was, well, I when I was like four, I asked my dad who's the best team, and he said Tottenham, and I was too young to even challenge that in any way. And so yeah, I'm a Tottenham fan, and obviously England fan. But yeah, the game's not about winning, right? It's nice.
All right now.
Right. Yeah.
It's still sore, man.
Yeah, we're just going to get your thoughts on the Euro final, though. You know, I mean, you say it's not about winning. I think we've all, Ben and I especially, as England fans ourselves, sort of reeling from that one a little bit still, I think. So just so you know, Steve, we make these little things, we like to call them our trash takes every week. So obviously the last episode, it was the Euro final, in which we had to make our predictions on who would win the Euro final. Steve was the only one to say Italy. He was jeered with gusto, but apparently he came out on top. So well done, Steve, I guess. But Adam, how do you feel about that game?
So you know, it's coming home, and it's a headline. It maybe does sound a little arrogant, but when you actually listen to the song, yeah, it's the opposite. It's about, yeah, everybody knows the result. You're going to lose. That's what it's, yeah, about. And I have a dream that maybe one day we'll win. That's kind of what it's about, right? And it's like, so it's really hard to shake that psyche, because that is in you. You can see it in the game, right? Like, if we're not, if England isn't like on the offensive, everybody's scared. Everybody's on edge. Yeah. And that's got to flow through to the players, right? You know, where the team doesn't really necessarily have the crowd behind them all the time. So I was thinking, like, could this be, like, I'm so used to not winning, you know, like, for so long, but could this actually be a time? And when they scored, it was like, my God, they really could be. Did I think we were going to win? I had hoped, but like, there are teams like Mourinho, actually pre-Tottenham, right? There are people that are just born kind of winners, you know, that just have it somehow in their psyche that they will win. And honestly, it's really happened, right? You know, their centre backs, if England did some of that stuff, they would have been sent off straight away, right? If you go over the top of the ball with your studs showing, you get sent off. If you grab somebody by the neck and like, that, like, give them whiplash, like, you know,
debatably, that's assault and battery, right? Like, just to destroyed him, right? And the kid's like 19, so he's pretty much on a minor. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, assaulting the child. That's my two cents on that one. Oh, I'm with you. But you're right about the song, right, Adam? Like, the song is about heartbreak, right? And I think Alex and I, so we went to one of the bars in Jersey City for it, with a bunch of other fans. And unfortunately, we always forget that, you know, Jersey City is full of Italians, so we're slightly outnumbered. But that being said, when we were sitting there, Alex turned to me because, you know, we had a good hour where we were winning, you know what I mean, which is unheard of. And he just turned to me and goes, I don't know what we're going to do if we actually win. Like, all of a sudden, English football is all about heartbreak. All of a sudden, we got to figure out how to win.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah.
It would change the culture. Like, it would just be an entire sea change for the entire footballing culture of England if we had won that game, I feel like.
Yeah, and someone we were with was, like, waving his fist of, like, these kids don't know how good they have it. Growing up as England fans, like, you don't know what it's like. No, that's been wild, man. Were you impressed with the rest of the tournament, or are you of the mindset, like some of us, myself in particular, that England had failed into the final almost? You know what I mean? Like, there's a negative sort of frame of mind that some of us England fans have about it. What are your thoughts?
But is that a bit of that British psyche again? you know, that, like, even winning, we think we failed. It's like, I thought, you could argue that every game was well managed and we did just enough to get through, right? But, you know, it's a bit like Tottenham, you know, to dare is to do. It's like, it's not just about winning 1-0 with Mourinho. Like, that's not good enough, right? It's like, you've actually got to play with some class and some quality. And if you lose, then, you know, that's what we expect, you know, to some extent. So I wouldn't say we failed through to that point, but we were definitely didn't have the our foot. We weren't, what's the phrase, like, heavy on the accelerator, you know.
It wasn't very assertive.
No. And our bench was so strong. It was like, it's kind of interesting how many good players were left. Like Sancho, I wish we played him more, because that one game he played was amazing.
There's much discussion, I guess you could say, about Southgate's tactics. You know, to his credit, I don't think he listened to any of the critics. You know, he played his game. He knew what he wanted to do. It seemed like he knew what he wanted to do. But then some of the decisions that he did end up making with substitutes seemed a bit questionable. You know, I mean, you can say a lot about whatever happened with the penalties, but to his credit, he probably had some practice with those players saying, okay, they look the strongest taking the penalties. I want to get them on right before that time. You know, we don't know what happened there. But, you know, some of the times, you know, when he put Jack Grealish on and then took him off 15 minutes later, you know, well, did he pick up a knock? Like, did something happen? Was that always the plan? You know, it doesn't quite make sense in the fan's mind. And that'll always make you question it. But I mean, I think we have to sort of, you know, you'd rather be in the fight than be watching it from the stands, right? We made it to the final. I think that that's something really good and positive to build upon. If I'm looking in at it from a positive angle, we came third in the World Cup. We came second in the Euros. So what's left? We got to come first in the World Cup. But I don't know about you. To me, a France that doesn't slip up, a Germany with a new coach. I don't know if you were able to catch any of the Copa America stuff, but Brazil and Argentina looked really good. You know, some of these teams are just going to be firing on all cylinders, and only in about 18 months' time. You know, do you realistically think that England has a shot kind of going forward, or was this our chance?
I'm going to open my beer first before I answer that.
That's a sipper.
The thing that's the hardest, so it does feel like you got punched in the guts really hard, right? Because the way they lost,
when Pickford saved against Jorginho with that penalty, my wife and I, Grace, we said to each other, as long as Saka doesn't come up for this next penalty, we'll take this. And then he walks up, it's like the youngest kid who's never taken a penalty for his club,
right?
He looks nervous when he comes on. Is given like
the last one.
Yeah, with the history of everything that England goes through in penalties, it's like Harry Kane should have been on that last one, you know, that not the first. But now I've totally lost my train of thought. I go off on that rant. Oh, as for it's so hard to get that chance. Like you can't expect to be in the final of the World Cup, you know, even if you're the best team.
It's
like poker, you know, like you might have the best hand, but not saying that we have the best hand, but even if you had the best hand, you don't win every time. You know, so all you can do is put up a good showing and keep your fingers crossed, right? But like to get that close and not do it, that's the first time in my lifetime we've got that close, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it will ever happen again. You know, you can't expect it, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But so it's pretty rough. It's pretty rough.
You got to think though, like if you're Saka, right? What is he, 19?
Yeah.
Because that's a dream. You know what I mean? 19-year-olds are dreaming of that. You know, I'm going to get there. I'm going to be that guy. Poor kid. You know what I mean? Like,
how is he placed as fifth though? How is he the fifth, the last penalty taker? That does not cease to baffle me.
Did you see Grealish came out on Twitter today saying like, hey, I just want to set the record straight. I asked for a penalty.
I've seen it all, but I'm just like, I just don't get how even in the moment that's like, even if he's offering or Southgate calls him out or whatever, like how does he get to be fifth? I just don't, it just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I'd say the same is true for Sancho, right? Sancho is unreal. He's got a lot of potential, but he's also very young and not proven. So I think he, you know, Rashford kind of makes sense to me, but you know, I got a thing for United strikers, but, I'm still in, you know, the grieving model, right? So like I'm going back and forth between denial and anger, and I'm getting angry at Southgate for subbing on two players and letting their first touch be a PK in Euros finals, right? That's my real frustrations there. But at the same time, like you're saying, you know, we got to trust Southgate got us there.
Yeah.
He's got us to a semi, you know, he's got us to a final, and no, he didn't win it. And yes, we're going to be frustrated about it for a little bit. It's just for me, like classic Southgate. Like PKs, you screwed up PKs, friend. But I was also skeptical when you threw Harry Maguire in for the second PK. I was like,
yeah, that's a good
come
point.
On. You know, like that was scary as well. Great PK.
He dispatched that thing, top bins. Yeah.
I think, you know, there might have been overthinking, right? Like some of it to me is Southgate's picking his lineup of like, all right, they have not scouted these players taking PKs. They haven't been on the field. The keeper's not going to have that in his notes. He might have overthought it, but again, easy for me to be a Monday morning quarterback for Euros now that it's all done and dusted. But still, pretty frustrated. And I do think England could not buy a foul, right? Like you're saying, studs up several occasions. Chiellini takes one of the fastest players on the field down by the throat, and we don't even look at it in VAR. What's the point, you know?
And going over the ball with your studs up, that's a straight red, and that's what was done. And actually, it's kind of interesting because like Harry Kane got took out many times with just play on. And like there was one time that he flew through the air. Like that's just not possible by yourself, you know. but the guy just wanted to play on all the time. And you know, this is maybe the difference. Like if we had learned that, we should have been doing the same thing to them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was saying we were lacking a little bit of the physical nature that typically makes England special, right? Like it's rare that you see an Italian side come in and be a more physical team, yet alone England not be, you know, the ones going over top of the ball. But, you know, yeah, Alex, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just so Stephen Ben and I have had a little bit of a conversation about just seeing over the course of the Euros how maybe the refereeing from sort of the continent, I guess it's not even the continent anymore, in actual Europe now, is arguably better than the refereeing that we see in the Premier League. And I think that some of that goes to your point about VAR, where it almost seemed like VAR decisions were all made in the background during this tournament. They weren't made to be something that was, you know, a huge spectacle and sort of interrupted the game or anything like that. Whereas I feel like, I don't know how you feel, but especially in the past season, I feel like so many decisions, controversial decisions, were made via VAR, and they could have gone either way. Some were overturned that shouldn't have been, essentially. But do you think that, you know, that got into some of the players' mindsets, where, you know, they're used to almost having, you know, a foul happens and then they have to take 90 seconds to sort of go over it again.
Being micromanaged.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the commentators on ESPN, I can't remember the name. It's the American guy. There's the
Taylor Twellman. Alex loves him.
And he made this comment saying that the refs should never give any controversial decision, because then to use VAR to see if they made a mistake. And it's like, well, that kind of, where have we got to, like, where have we got to with this? It's like, so now you're trying to tell you that the ref shouldn't make any decision.
Yeah.
But right now the ref is making the decision and it's never being challenged because it's not an obvious mistake. It's like, I don't know. There's an inherent bias, right? And in refereeing, that generally that one team is probably going to get the rubber, the green, right? Use a different cliche from another game, right? But and I was trying to, like, I was trying to be calm through the whole game and tell my son, he was getting really upset about the ref, right? I said, you know, it all comes together, right? Like if they're having the luck now, but then it would be us as the luck. But if there is bias in there, something to be glaring and obvious is quite a high bar to have to be corrected. Like is, but then on the other hand, like we've seen VAR in the last Premier League season, like be like
terrible.
Yeah, terrible. So. And
part
I
was gonna say, part of refereeing is you get to hate the referee. Yeah. Someone gets to hate the referee. It's part of the job. Like it comes with the gig. Yeah, right.
As you know, there are many chants about that one.
Exactly. Just a few. Just
my favorite one.
Irrespective of how we did, just think Iceland 2016. You know, it's like wow, how far have we come from that? Lowest of the low. I was in San Diego then watching that game, and it was like, my God, that was we
embarrassing.
Yeah. So I give Southgate a lot of credit for all of that, you know, and a lot of this started 10 years ago when they implemented the new training facility, they a whole youth program from development, right? So you talked about these other teams being stronger in you know, 18 months, but look at us as well, right? We have that bench is mostly young, right? And it's going to be, it's more for us like center backs, which young center backs are coming through.
Yeah.
There's more position specific, right? But it's kind of,
It's exciting times, even though it really hurts, I think.
Yeah.
It kind of bringing up that past topic that we were talking about, like, was this England's tournament or not? I'm kind of torn between two different mindsets here. Part of me thinks that, I mean, like we've been talking about, there's a lot of potential. We can see a lot of the young players coming through. We can kind of forecast the road ahead. And as long as you can utilize those tools at the right time, I don't see why, you know, the next tournament in 18 months on paper shouldn't be something to not be excited about, you know, relatively decent progress, you know, progress pretty far in the tournament. But another part of me thinks too, and I was telling these guys a little bit before you got here, Adam, is that with this Euros, England, I think, had home field advantage. I mean, almost all of their matches were played in Wembley. They had a lot of convenience. They were familiar with a lot of it. There was a lot of, I mean, it just takes a lot. And almost all the fans in that stadium were English fans. There's just a lot of factors that can add up to be the 12th man. And they got to the final. I wonder if in Qatar, in a different climate, a different setting, you know, I am curious if that 12th man effect, will it be there in Qatar?
I'd like to answer that because our best game was not in England.
Yeah, it was Rome.
And I honestly feel that if you watch the game and just listen to the crowd, I don't know how much of actually a positive influence in those moments an English crowd is. Because there's this psyche that you know it's going to go wrong. And it's not like we're going to go in there and we're going to do our best and we're going to really get behind the team. It's like the team has to earn us to be behind you. And if you're not, then we're going to throw paper airplanes on the field, like, was that 2017, you know, or whatever, you know. It's a strange thing, like, because for me now, being in the US for as long as I have, I can see that kind of winning mentality, and I can see how it's not necessarily there as much as I would hope in an England play. So I hear you. We should have had, but we also, you know, the whole nation gets behind too much. What is it? One out of every two people watched the game on Sunday, watched the final.
Yeah, I did see that. It was one of the most, I think the most watched football game in a while, especially about 30 plus million people in the country.
I wonder if now is a turning point, not a permanent turning point, but maybe even like a temporary for this generation of you know, the England squad that's kind of surging and coming through here.
I think to your point, Steve, you're going to see an evolution, hopefully, of the English fan, right? Like, English fans typically travel, get themselves in trouble. They have low expectations, but high demands almost. And, you know, to the point of them performing better in Rome, you almost ask the question, were there less distractions there? Was it quieter in terms of the chatter from the press? You know, you heard the stories even during the game. You got people breaking into the gates, kicking people's heads in the stadiums. Like, it was nuts. And you know what I mean? Like, the TV didn't even cover it. But then you look at, you know, the game before, you got fans putting laser pointers on Schmeichel's face. You got this, that, and the other going on. There's a lot of stuff that comes with it. And I think the last World Cup semifinal, you know, accomplishment, if you will, is probably a better testament to it as well. But yeah, I hear both of you and agree that the fans are such a negative aspect. And then you get some drunk English fans. I shared, like, I went to a friendly, I don't know, in the early 2000s against, like, Israel. And it was the first time that I'd ever seen, like, real racism. Like, on the tube home, people not even at the game, and people that were just traveling home from work, not Israeli, just different colored skin, got treated as if they were part of this team. And it can be really embarrassing at times. But I think, you know, you're hearing a lot about it in the press right now. I think finally England is talking about it in a progressive kind of way of like, hey, look, we need to address this. This cannot continue. You have players calling out, like Tyrone Mings called out a government officials for not supporting the players taking knees and things like that. And I'm hopeful and maybe wrongfully optimistic that that's the start of the turning of the tide. And then what happens when all of a sudden you do have that 12th man and it is a much more positive thing, because some of those players, the way they're being treated right now, aren't going to be proud to play for that country. And that's a shame. And that's where I hope we're seeing, you know, that evolution that I'm hoping is out there.
I guess what I, I agree with you. The aim that I was taking was, Adam was talking about, you know, English fans for so long have just like have this inherent like negative psyche on supporting the national team. And, you know, 2018 brought a little bit, but it wasn't enough to completely like, you know, subdue that psyche. But I think as the tournament passes us by and people reflect and think about, you know, really what England did in this tournament and kind of how the whole nation kind of came together as one, I think the overall view on it is a positive one for English fans and for the team. And I do wonder if with, you know, these younger players getting, you know, 18 months when it comes time to lace them up again for another international tournament, will that same psyche be there? Or will there be a bit more hope? Because, you know, it's the same. It's basically almost the same team for the next tournament. And we know what happened. We know what happened in 21. You know, they made it to the final. Like, I just wonder if, like, maybe there's a temporary bubble of this generation. Does that psyche still there, or maybe to a lesser effect? It just makes me wonder if that's would be the case.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I mean, we can sit here and proletize about what's going to happen in the future.
Sure, of course,
And hours. But it's down to the players.
Like, how could you continue to be negative? Like, if your team is, you know, you did
because
so well
we're English, Steve. Because
part of the fun, Steve. Come on.
Well, like, if this is like, I don't know, like with this group, like if you continue to play, do well in tournaments, it's like, making progress. You are making progress. Like, I know, I understand. Sometimes it's almost never, whatever you do is never enough. Like, if you win, it's still never, like, I understand.
Yeah. It's not good enough. Yeah. That's always the case. Adam, let me ask you this as a Tottenham fan and kind of switching gears a little bit. What are your thoughts on Gareth Bale? Like, I know it's not a loaded question. I have no opinion on the matter other than the man bun's got to go. Where's your head at with Gareth Bale?
It's funny when you see him when he first played for Tottenham and now, because like he's a different person, right? Like he's so so different. And his class was always his speed, and he doesn't have that now, right? Mm-hmm. Like when he first played in left back at Tottenham, it was like he could make mistakes, but kind of like Kyle Walker, he would just get back. And there's that one goal that he scored where he literally just kicked the ball miles past this guy and just sprinted . I can't remember who it was against, but it's one of those ones that always shows up on his best goals. But when he came back, it's kind of his stats are pretty good despite all of the aura of failure around him, you know, like the criticism. Yeah, didn't he like score 16 in 34 appearances? My stats aren't going to be ideal, but something like that. It was pretty impressive. But I think one thing Southgate's really good at is bringing a team together, right? So, you know, the whole has to always be greater than the sum of the parts. And when I see Bale score, he like stands at the side like and looks like he's trying to say, everybody look at me, how great I am, right? He doesn't seem like a team player to me. I wonder if he's like the golden generation, you know, like all of these cliques. I wonder if he creates a clique. And so even though he may be really good, you know, maybe he's not great for the team as a whole.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was really excited when he came back and then thinking, okay, he's not being played at all.
Right.
Again, like if Real Madrid weren't playing him, then maybe there's something in this.
The relationship between Bale and Zidane was always a strange one that I don't think anybody really understood.
Yeah.
It's difficult to know what kind of Bale you were going to get. If it was just somebody that they just were sleeping on and he comes and just changes everything, or if it's like, okay, maybe this is the reason why Zidane hasn't been playing him.
I think
maybe he's on to something.
Yeah, but it was also never a step forward, right? It was a kind of a short-term plug. But was it for a position that we needed a short-term plug? I don't think so. So it wasn't like plugging a hole that we had a youngster coming through. for that one season. It felt like it was a luxury kind of move or an opportunistic move. I was really excited about it. And then it didn't kind of come through, you know.
I don't seem like that's what it was. It was just to get people excited about, like when they announced Bale, everyone, like, I feel like almost every Tottenham fan would have been like ears perked up, you know, kind of like, oh, I remember that guy. Like,
got some revenue for New Jersey sales coming in, going to help generate some cash real quick. So let me ask you this, you know, Nuno Espirito Santo coming in, new coach, thoughts, expectations?
I am. So, let me give you some background. So I had a season ticket when I was in London still, and I only gave it up when I left the country, right? Mm. And I think if I was cut, I would bleed white and blue, right? Because it's like I am pretty staunchly at Tottenham. We've when the Sounders played Spurs, we did a beer for charity, and Ledley King came to the brewery and tapped a cup, and it was like, honestly,
that's awesome.
It's the best thing ever. Right? I used to go and with a season ticket and watch him lead out Tottenham every week. I went to Wembley to watch him lead out England, right? And I got this guy who is a legend in his own right asking me, okay, so how do I do this? How do I do this? Just hit it. Just hit this thing with the mallet and you'll tap the cask, right? It was pretty amazing. So I got some photos with me and him and with our son and stuff. But I went.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty amazing. And then we got to, they came and played in LA in 18, maybe 2018, I think. And we got into a training session. So we got the squad, the Champions League finalist squad. I've got two signed shirts from all of that squad because we managed to like get all of our shirts signed. And I got a picture of me with Pochettino and our youngest son. And when I saw him, I shook his hand. I just said, thank you for everything you've done, right? You know, it kind of took him aback a little bit, you know, because I think he's just so amazing. And I don't think anybody else can kind of live up to him to some extent, right? He never fully achieved, but like he had a whole year where he wasn't allowed to get any player, right? You know, it's like, and that's going to catch up with you at some point. But yeah, in terms of going forward, I haven't really, I've been so focused on England, I haven't thought about that. But I do still hold a Pochettino in a high regard, like most, if not all Tottenham fans, you know, I think he's something else, you know.
How could you not say? Right?
yeah. But going forward, I mean, we talked about it briefly earlier, right? That is Kane going to stay? Because without Kane, we are totally hosed. The whole team is built around him.
Illusion on Arsenal.
I also love Harry Winks. Actually, I think he is so underrated. He gets so much grief. But he plugs holes like anything in central midfield, and then with Højbjerg as well. I think we got a lot of good in there. Got a new director of football, right? Who has a lot of links, and particularly in Italy. So maybe we can try and get some more players like Reguilón. You know, that weren't on my radar, but like. He has a level. Before he got injured, he was amazing in last season. He got injured and then he never really got back. So with a summer off, hopefully he can get there as well. But you know, there's a little bit more of a clear out needed of, you know, some aging players that we need to get behind. And the future is less rosy than it is for England, I think, because I think a lot of work needs to be done to get that generation through.
At least you're not Arsenal.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, the Tottenham being, you know, one of the 12 founding members of the two-day-long Super League, do you believe that sort of some of the Tottenham's heritage is being sort of held in high regard by those in charge, or do you feel like that was sort of a mistake by the club and they've sort of owned up to it and they know what they need to do for the fans going forward? Or what's your thoughts on that before we get to your beer?
Oh, that's a good question. That one, I think I'm in not a great position to really truly judge. I think if you're in England, that there's definitely a public outcry, right? That here, when I'm 6,000 miles away, I didn't really get to feel. Mm-hmm. And then also, I'm used to the franchise system now, you know, the franchise system of sports, and which is more like what they were trying to do with the Super League. So it didn't seem as horrendous as everybody thought it was to me, because I'm used to that as a concept in the US. And I wasn't open to it. And also, obviously, we've got to be the weakest team in it. So we're fighting above our weight there. But I understand it doesn't make sense in the relegation and promotion kind of mentality that is European football, right? But
yeah.
I also understand the franchise system that we have here. So I don't think I'm in the best spot to truly understand why that was such a bad thing, but I do understand why. But does that make sense?
It does a bit. I think I can see your point that it perhaps not as foreign, the idea of it, to you, especially, you know, having lived here for a little bit and sort of seen how everything happens in the States. I just wanted to get your take, just sort of if you felt like the club maybe itself had been sort of tarnished by being one of those names. I mean, you haven't seen any real fallout from it. I remember, you know, we had a good podcast discussion about it, obviously, when it happened, sort of just how it, we felt like it was taken away from the clubs and more so from the fans of the clubs, and putting it more into sort of the hands of those that were owners, that didn't really, you know, have any ties to even the cities that many of these clubs were in. Just wanted to know if you as a fan, you know, maybe it wasn't such a foreign idea, but would it have been something that you would have supported going forward?
I think the game is about glory, right? Yeah. And by putting the Super League, you cut that off from the vast majority, right? And so at its heart, it kills the game, right? So if you actually think about it, logically, you think about Wimbledon in the 80s, right? They got promoted from non-league every year for 5 years or something to get to the old first division, the Premier League equivalent, right? That's what the game's about. It's not about monetizing billion-dollar assets, you know?
Right.
I can feel myself getting angry thinking about our episode. I'm feeling it coming back.
You've worked through a lot of emotions this year. It's
been a year. But, it's not, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's not a foreign concept, but when you think about it, it is against the heart of football.
Right. Right. Perfectly put. So as we've touched on a little bit, you're from Seattle right now. As an Englishman, you might say that you quite enjoy the weather. For many of our American listeners, we're not quite sure. For Steve, who often gets confused about time zones, it is in the Pacific time zone. but it's also where Rubens Brews is based and located. So please tell us about the company. Tell us about your beers, everything you want us to know, everything you want everybody else to know about you.
So I came over originally, you're supposed to only be here for 18 months, extended it because I liked it here. Because actually, don't tell anybody, but the weather in the summer is really nice here. It's like, it hasn't
rained. We won't tell anyone.
It hasn't rained for 20 days. You pay for it. So when I first came here, it was like really nice summer. And then October, even I got depressed about the weather because I didn't see sun for 6 weeks. It was like, oh my God. But anyway, so I came from, my Grace, she explains this far better. Like I came from the land of boiled vegetables. So I grew up on boiled vegetables, right? Like you just boil the heck out of everything. And so my palate is quite refined. So everything tastes extreme to me. And so when I came over here and found what beer could be, I realized I was leaving the land of macro lager and bitter, and
this is what real beer could be. Back in 04, there was a lot of microbreweries growing in the area. And anyway, I trained my palate over time, started brewing in the garage, made a pretty decent sized system. And then we got the chance to brew at a commercial festival as home brewers in 2010. We won the People's Choice there. Then we had people asking us for our beer. And it's like, well, I'm literally just a home brewer in the garage. I don't have, this is a faux brewery. This isn't real. So I carried on brewing, doing competitions, won some national recognition. And then we found a little place that we could open, right? Because I had a good job. I liked my job. But I also like brewing and pouring beer. So I thought, well, maybe if we get this small place, if it all goes horribly wrong, I'm not an entrepreneur, I'm not a business owner. If it goes horribly wrong, then our son can do what he did on his birthday party and just go around the little space in his bike for a few hours once a week. The lease will finish. I kept my day job for 18 months. And, we're not gonna lose the house and lose everything. And long story short, we ran out of capacity in 6 months. I quit my job to find another space. When we got that space open, we ran out of capacity in 5 weeks. Then I got another space. We now have six buildings it's kind of like a hobby gone crazy in a good way. But it's fun. Like, so, we brew lots of different beers, and I won't bore you with all of that, but like we brewed like 180 different beers last year. We're, I think, the sixth biggest brewery in the state now. Last year we were the fastest growing brewery as well. But what's really great is what we can do with that. So we've set up a foundation, and Grace runs our foundation, and we're doing a lot of programs to increase the diversity in the industry. You know, it's a very white bearded male sort of industry, and we're trying to do what we can to kind of expand that. We actually work with one of the Seattle Sounders supporters clubs called Gorilla FC, and we've built a couple of tiny houses for them to help. It's fun. We've done a beer for a soccer charity when Tottenham came into town that time. Mm-hmm. And honestly, those things are the things that really make it fun, that sort of stick in your head, you know, the reason to do it, you know. It's a crazy journey. You never set off on it, you know, like it just kind of got pulled into it. And here we are a few years later. We'll be nine in August.
That's a success story right there, if I ever heard one. So sort of as the brewmaster, are you sort of the one creating the new beers, the new styles, new crafts, or are you working with other people now, or how's that working?
Yeah, so when we started, it was me, my brother-in-law and I, and okay. He had never brewed before, but I knew he could learn. So the first 50 batches I brewed with him. Yeah. And as we get bigger, we've got more of a team that can help get involved in a lot of that ideation. So now if anybody has an idea, they sort of put their hand up and we kind of brew it. The beer I'm drinking now, like it again, I think we said before, we should pour some of these down the drain.
Crack it and give you the...
Yeah.
We got a couple here.
Yeah. Ready to crack on with it.
So this was fun. We brewed a collaboration with another brewery in Seattle called Machine House, and they've got an expat Englishman as well who owns their brewery, and this beer is called It's Coming Home. But we did an English summer ale to sort of just celebrate the Euros in as a whole. We use British malts and British hops and new age British hops. So a little nod to the UK. And it's, you know, for me, like the Euros, most fun part of the Euros is the first few days where you have three games a day and you're watching teams that you'll never normally watch. And there's always great players that come out of these things. You know, that unexpected is the fun part. And that's kind of a little bit of what we're trying to do with this beer, you know, that I never brewed with this British hop before, but it was it's called Godiva, and it's It just adds it has a little bit of tropical fruit to it, but it has that earthiness, sort of British hop, Goldings in there as well. Yeah. So you can definitely sense that it's not a Yakima Pacific Northwest hop.
Yeah.
But it's got a little bit of that in there. So it's kind of fun, you know.
Takes me back to a sunny day at a pub garden.
We got the 4% ABV as well, so we can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can have a nice little all day bender. Yeah, it's fantastic. Ben, you have to give a one sip review.
heaven on earth is what I'm calling it.
There we go.
It does. I think Alex summarized it real good. It reminds you of either after training or Sunday at a garden. I always share with Steve little tidbits about the culture. Steve's visited. Steve, have you ever been to England or you only been to Scotland?
Yeah, I've been to both. Yeah.
One of my favorite stories to tell the people over here is actually I was in Camden like 5 years ago with my now wife, who's American. And we were in this pub, got a lager, and I'm walking out and I drop it and the whole place goes, "Way!" And it's just like, all right, guess I'm getting another beer. And it's just, it makes you think of times like that. And sometimes it's better to think of the memories that comes with a good taste in beer than it is the, the nodes and all of that stuff for me.
Yeah.
But I love it. It's great.
Oh, great. Yeah. You often get senses like that noise will probably take you back to that time and place. Yeah. Right. And you get that sense of taste as well. It reminds you of a time and a place. And how do you do that? There's a very strong terroir in beer. It's not maybe as well known as wine, right? But like a British malt might be technically the same type of malt as a US malt or a German, but they taste very different. The same thing with hops, right? So you can get a Pilsner malt, and that could be from the US or Germany, and they're very, very different. One of the things we do, we call it glass backwards mentality. So if I'm trying to get a certain flavor profile, I work at the end point and work backwards from there, and try and make sure that we're not constraining ourselves by production efficiencies or by what we have on hand or ease, that's why it's important. If you're going to do a beer like this, it's important to use a British yeast, a British malt, and British hop to give you that terroir, and then hopefully that does make you think of, it makes you think of something else, like a deja vu almost.
Yeah, it's it's good. So you talked a little bit about that process of growth, right? And you guys grew pretty rapidly. Was there a time where it was hard for you to let go of that creative process? You go from being the brewmaster, you're still the brewmaster, but you go from, brewing these batches yourself in your house, you've got all of this control, and as your team grows, you got to be kind of comfortable with that creative process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. It is hard, right? Because what you have to, there's a few things that you have to get comfortable with. Like the first thing is, if somebody doesn't do something as well as you think you can, that's okay, right? Because say you can get five people that can do 80% of what you can, then you've got four times the amount of people that are doing that work, right? So you have to get comfortable with scaling in that sense, right? You can't expect everybody to be to 100%, but you don't need that. That's not what you need. It is a lot about communication. And for us, when you're growing a lot, it's hard to communicate internally. Like people hear things differently. People maybe don't pass the message on as well as maybe you'd like or have thought would happen. You have to get comfortable with some of this stuff. But then I also, I was managing decent sized teams in the past, and it's something that I kind of was trained on in a more of a professional setting. So it's a consciousness that you have already taught into you, which is kind of handy to have already, not have to learn that at the same time, right? It's a consciousness that you already have.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, I think it's good. I think, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, just around the ideation. Again, like more minds together are better than one, right? So the more people that can come up with ideas, the better, right? And come up with, and often the craziest ideas are the things that you kind of want, right? Like pull you in a certain direction that you weren't outside your comfort zone. And yeah, there's a high level of experimentation that in an ideal brewery you'd have as a day-to-day basis, right? And comfortableness with failure, that's another thing, that not every beer is going to turn out perfectly, and you'd be comfortable with that, you know?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, having the wherewithal as a company grows to have, I don't know if foresight is the correct word, or just the awareness that the need to have a foundation as you grow as well is really inspiring. I think it's cool to see all sorts of organizations do that. But, you know, when I think of breweries, I don't always think of things like the diversity of breweries and how there's a need for that. So, you know, that's inspiring. And I think it's important for people to hear about that. So thank you for doing that. I guess I don't know how else to kind of say that, but it's been cool to learn about.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, having a brewery is an opportunity, right, to do what you think is right. Like we pay 100% healthcare for all of our team, because especially obviously with the UK heritage, that kind of is what you kind of should have, right? You know? So it's just, I was going to use a Spider-Man quote, but you know, you have this opportunity and you have this responsibility, you need to use it, right? For the way you want things to be, you know. We're only small, but we'll do our best, right?
Well, we like to make nicknames for some of the coaches and things like that in the Premier League. So for you, you're English Spider-Man now.
My favorite Halloween outfit.
There you go. So it sounds like, you know, you have a lot of stuff that you talk about when it comes to brewing and the entire process that, and thought process even that goes into a lot of this. You talk about this, you guys have a podcast yourself, Ruben Sight Glass. Tell us a little about that. A lot of discussion sort of similar to what we're having here, or what else is discussed?
Yeah. So Ruben Sight Glass, it's on all of the major, you know, podcast platforms. Yeah, unfortunately we don't talk about football. I need to get that in somehow, right? Yeah. But what we try and do is, you know, that the kind of the 80-20 rule. So like, I think craft is better than just tastes a lot better, whether that be craft beer, whether that be craft coffee, whether that be craft chocolate, right? So anything, bakeries as well, right? So my dad was a baker, so I actually lived on a bakery for like the first 8 years of my life, you know. Actually, that's not true. That was the first 8 years of my life I was in a bakery, but my parents, when they first had me, we lived in a pub, so it's quite fitting that I own a brewery, right?
Amazing.
Apple and tree, right? Like
yeah, it was like by osmosis, right? But so our podcast is all about what is that extra that you need to do to get that 20%, you know, the 80% of work a craftsman needs to do to get that 20% better product, right? So like with us, it's that glass backwards approach, like being unconstrained about recipe development. But with a baker, it might be around naturally harvesting the wild yeast that you're going to make your sourdough with, you know, for example, and then keeping that culture running. And we have a local chocolatier. For them, it's a lot about sourcing their nibs, right? So it's and then I find that I can actually learn quite a lot from these discussions as well, because you can learn similar topics, right? So whether it be I also have a little roaster at home, so like coffee is kind of a fun thing. You find that once you're into one of these things, you're kind of into all of them to some extent, you know. I need to find a good cheesemaker to go and speak to next, because that's kind of that's there cool. You go.
Hopefully not an Italian cheesemaker.
Too soon.
Yeah. Sorry to bring that up. Well, Adam, it's been fantastic to talk to you. You know, you just talked about learning a lot from other people. I feel like we've learned just a little bit from you. You've expanded our podcast horizons, I think, exponentially just in about the hour that we've chatted here. And we really do hope that we can have you back. We are really, really glad to have you on board, and just happy to be able to sort of share our businesses together and our podcasts, and just, you know, just be able to talk and chat and everything like that. And we absolutely would love to have you back. It'd be fantastic.
I'd love to, but like, it's nice talking to people who know football. Like,
yeah,
they're up.
There's others out there.
Yeah, there are.
We do exist.
Well, I can just bore myself with it, because like, I just like talking about this stuff. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And for everybody, again, it's Ruben's Brews. It's in Seattle. You can look it up. It's rubensbrews.com. You'll be able to find the podcast that we were just talking about. You'll be able to find everything about the foundation, everything about the beers. If you are in the Seattle area, or I guess in the Pacific Northwest entirely, are you guys opening up because of COVID? Are tap rooms starting to open back up and everything like that? Or are you getting towards that?
Just since July 1, we've opened in Washington.
Perfect. Yeah. There you go. So if you're in the area, stop by.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks again, Adam.
Thank you. All right. Fantastic stuff there again from Adam. That is Ruben's Brews in Seattle. Check them out, rubensbrews.com. Found out about everything that they've got going on, everything we talked about. And we do hope that Adam will come back again. Fantastic guy to talk to. And his beer's not bad either. So check that out. All right, boys. So little look ahead to the Premier League season. Everybody might have seen, you know, sort of preseason training videos starting to pop up in your feeds again. But is it a new season? Same old Arsenal. They just lost 2-1 to Hibs in Scotland in one of their opening games. Steve, you know Hibs better than any of us. Are they better than Arsenal, or is Arsenal just that bad?
Oh, Hibs should have had like 7-0.
Is it too soon to say Arteta out?
Hibs should have just ran away with it. Hibs are an okay side. I mean, in the Premiership, but it's not a question. Arsenal with to be fair, I don't know the side that Arsenal fielded that day. I just saw the headline score.
Saw that miss by the keeper.
Yeah,
keeper saw the worst clearance of all times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's currently up on the Real Swift Kicks Twitter, if you want to check that out.
But on paper, I mean, the players that Arsenal have against, it's a strange preseason friendly, Hibs versus Arsenal, I thought.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, when I saw the scoreline, I was like, interesting game. And then obviously the scoreline made it laughable. But Arsenal, I don't know. It's not looking, I'm not saying it's all doom and gloom and like everything's, we got to burn the place and start over, but man, it doesn't give you a good
Arsenal.
If you're an Arsenal,
it's not a bad place to start.
But what do you mean? It's a bad place to start.
They're terrible. No, I meant like burn the place down and start over.
If you have new hope, if you have like new hope for the season, I'm not saying like the new season you should just chuck it in the bin now and say like, oh well, that's it's toast. But as an Arsenal fan, I feel like the new glass half full or new aspirations, the new hopes that you have for the next season definitely took some size of a dent after seeing that result. Like you just think, oh, this it's not coming home. It's going to happen again, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
we're going to finish in the bottom half.
Arsenal and newly promoted Brentford kick the Premier League season off in about a month from now, August 13th on Friday. So I guess they got a lot of work to do in the next 30 days.
Trash take, Brentford 1, Arsenal 0.
Ooh, early trash takes coming in.
I'm getting warmed up.
I was going to ask, as we look forward to that new Premier League season, what is the one thing that you're most excited about looking forward to the new season? I'm going to say that Brentford freshening things up and Arsenal going down. I was going to say full stadiums, but I'm looking forward to see what Brentford's going to do.
Brentford's such a casual football name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like pub league Brentford in the Premier League. Yeah, anything
they're like the Wasps or something too, aren't they?
I think they are. Now that you say that.
So for me, it's seeing if United can be relevant again. Last year was a glimmer of hope as a United fan. I think the opportunity is there, but they got to execute. So let's see if they can do it. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to putting that Euros final behind me as soon as possible.
There you go. What about you, Steve?
It's an interesting question because I don't necessarily like support a team. I mean, like, it's casual Leicester City supporter. I mean, I'm interested as to what they accomplish, but
that's a reveal by Steve, Leicester fan. Tying you to Leicester casual, for the rest of the
very,
season.
Very casual. Very like casual. A
nip slip.
Yeah, also very casual. But there's not necessarily one thing that I'm excited for. There's not like one story or underdog story, you know, something that's a development that's happened that I'm interested to see how it plays out. It's just the normal, you know, the new dawn, of a new season, new possibilities, new, just everything. It's just the next season. You can feel it already. You see like on social media posts of like the Premier League and other teams that, you know, you support, you can see the players putting in, preseason, you can see the images and like videos and stuff like that. You can see new signings being announced and stuff like that. You see fixtures being announced, you know, kits being revealed for the new season. You get the buzz again about, you know, going at it again. That's, I mean, I'm just looking forward to the season. There's just the season as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Ben, we've heard it here first. Steve's a Leicester fan, on top of Scotland and Celtic.
Until he dies.
Yeah. Ride or die, you win or lose with the team, Steve. That's how it goes.
I am interested to see what Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, we're fair weather fans.
Yeah.
If we wanted to pin that down, narrow that down a little bit, I am curious to see how Jamie Vardy fares this season. Is he past it? Is he not past it?
Spoken like a true Leicester fan.
Yeah.
It's on the minds of every Fox.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. All right, Ben, take us away. It's been a great podcast. Great to have our first interview. We're reaching new heights, man.
So as always, we know we're not your favorite podcast. We're probably top 20 at least. I don't really want that pressure of disappointing you every week. So if we're like your last resort and you still listen, I'm good with it, right? At least then you're never disappointed. But I want a huge shout out to Steve and Alex. It's always been a pleasure, guys. And let me just put this out there. If you haven't told someone about the Swift Kicks podcast yet, again, set the bar low, dead to me. Just putting that out there. So TTYL, talk to you later. Peace out. Ricardo. Ricardo.